Welcome back to TYT. I'm Anna Kasparian, and you guys are in for a fascinating segment because Lauren Savon, who is a journalist in Los Angeles, is joining me to talk about some of what's going on in the country right now in regard to sexual harassment, sexual assault. She is an incredible reporter, but more importantly, she is one of the courageous women who came forward when the Harvey Weinstein story broke. And she shared about her, you know, pretty horrible experience with him back in 2007, I believe. Mm-hmm. And you know, I say it's courageous because, first of all, a lot of times when women come forward and they share their experiences in similar instances, especially when it comes to a man with power, they're usually met with, you know, it goes beyond skepticism. They're met with brutal language, you know, even more degrading treatment. And it was so important for that story to break because it opened the floodgates and made a lot of other women feel comfortable coming forward. So thank you for doing that, and thank you for joining me.
Oh yeah, thank you for having me. Thank you.
So I just, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the story, I really don't want her to have to get into the details again, but I want to quickly summarize what he did. This happened back in 2007 at Cipriani, which is a pretty famous restaurant in Manhattan. She was with Harvey Weinstein. He was showing her around the restaurant, and at a different restaurant, I apologize. At this point, it was like a Cuban restaurant.
Yeah,
something
it was
like that.
Socialista, which is now closed, but
right.
Yeah.
And so at one point, he corners her into a like back of the restaurant area, and tries to make a move on you. And Lauren, you told him, "No, I have a boyfriend." And at that point, he tells you to just shut up and watch. And just then he pulls his penis out and masturbates in front of you.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean,
I know.
Unbelievable. So that's what you went through. And what I'm curious about is, what was the reaction that you got following the publication of all these allegations, including yours?
You mean now?
Yeah.
I mean, I came out initially because that New York Times story came out with Ashley Judd and Rose McGowan, who bravely came out against him. And I was so proud of them for doing that. And I thought, oh, good, finally, people are going to see what he's like. And then he came out with a ridiculous apology, calling them liars, basically, going on some political rant. I didn't even understand what he was talking about. And that made me furious because I knew what kind of guy he was based on that encounter I had with him 10 years prior. So that's why I decided to come out publicly. And it was definitely scary. Mm-hmm. I didn't sleep the whole night before I knew it was going to be published because I still wasn't sure if I should even attach my name to it. I was, you know, as a woman, it's like, what do you have to gain from this? And then for the rest of your life, you know, anytime someone Googles your name, this is what's going to come up.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be forever known as the, you know, potted plant girl or something.
Oh my God. And not only that, I mean, did you worry about the reaction to it? Because I think about women in college who come forward saying that they've been raped or sexually assaulted, and a lot of them are dragged through the mud. And I wonder if, you know, you had any of those fears before that story was published, like that night when you couldn't sleep.
Well, yeah, I did. I did have some of those fears. And I thought that people would think, well, what's her agenda? What's her angle? Why is she doing this? And that was the thing. That was kind of why I came forward. I didn't have an agenda. I didn't want anything from Harvey Weinstein. I didn't want to sue him. I didn't want money. I didn't want to be in a movie, nothing. So I felt like perhaps my voice could validate their voices because I didn't work in the industry and I didn't have to work with him like they did.
Mm-hmm.
And the reaction, I want to say like 90% positive, 90% of women saying, wow, thank you for telling your story and sharing their own stories with me. You know, as with anything, I mean, there are plenty of people like trolling online who will say, you know, you kept quiet for 10 years and you could have helped someone else, which just frankly isn't true, number one. And number two, that's what we need to change, this victim blaming, this victim shaming culture, because that's exactly why people don't come out. I mean, if I came out when it happened, they would be like, oh, you're overreacting and it's Harvey Weinstein, so good luck.
Oh,
and then when you do come out, they say, well, what took you so long? You know, I mean, you can't win.
I want to get to that. The question of why it takes people so long to come forward. So it was reported, and unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to cover this story until now, and I think it's really important to discuss it. It was reported that Harvey Weinstein would hire opposition researchers, yeah. I mean, very prominent opposition researchers, to start spying on the accusers. And then he would try to push for a smear campaign to take away any credibility that these women might have,
right.
And to, again, drag them through the mud. And the reason why we know about that is because Ronan Farrow spoke very candidly about, you know, who he hired and what he planned on doing. And so the companies, the firms included Kroll, one of the largest corporate intelligence companies, and Black Cube, an enterprise run largely by former officers of Mossad and other Israeli intelligence agencies. It was also becoming increasingly obvious that this was going on because Rose McGowan was like noticing that people were asking her very personal questions and following her around. And it turned out that some of these people ended up being spies and oppo researchers. And so, yeah, I mean, at least my take is that any person who is not in a position of power would be fearful that they would be, you know, followed around and smeared, and their name would be completely destroyed, even though they're the victims.
And we saw it with the Italian actress and model who actually had evidence, who had a recording, an audio recording of him, you know, relentlessly dragging her into his hotel room, and yet, you know, nothing was done about that. And then he had, you know, journalists at the New York Post. Mm-hmm. Write articles basically smearing her, saying, oh, she's accusing him of what? Like, she showed up at his party, she did this, she did that, and, you know, insinuating that she was a liar and trying to get something out of him. So why would anyone have ever come forward? I mean, there was no winning. And then if you had to work in that industry, if you had to work with him, I mean, just imagine having to deal with this guy, having, you know, Daryl Hannah said she was moving a bureau in front of her hotel room door to keep him out. Wow. And when she complained about it, she was taken off the press tour. I mean, just imagine. So before right now, there was no upside to coming forward with your story. It was something that you had to keep a secret, deal with, and then do this weird tap dance with this person if you still had to work with him, to be polite and try just not to be alone with them. I mean, women shouldn't have to deal with that, especially in the workplace.
And you did have to deal with him. You didn't have to necessarily communicate with him, but you would have to see him around following that pretty terrible encounter.
Well, when it came to Hollywood, I would cover red carpet events all the time. So he would oftentimes be on the red carpet because a lot of his movies get nominated. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I would try my best to never have to interview him or to pretend I didn't see him if he went by. And I think I did once have to talk to him at a red carpet years ago, and you know, he had no idea who I was. I mean, he didn't show any recognition, which I was grateful for,
right.
By the way.
And but it's telling, right?
Yeah,
it's telling because you know, I think you were on Megyn Kelly's show when you said this, that that made it abundantly clear that you were not the only victim.
Oh right? Yeah,
that there had been many others.
Oh yeah, I knew that night that this goes on all the time because. Yeah. It was like less than an hour from meeting him, a stranger, to having him expose himself. I mean, you count, do the math over 30 years, how many encounters he must have had with women that he would never see again or that he did see again. I mean, there are thousands, there have to be.
Yeah, right now there are there probably are more that I don't know about, but the latest number that I read was 80 women accusing him of sexual harassment, sexual assault. Now, I wanna kind of wrap up the conversation by talking about the culture, because this is not simply a Harvey Weinstein problem. This is not an isolated incident. As you guys know, this has now transferred on to other professions, other industries.
Sure.
And in my opinion, this shows that there is a cultural issue here. And it's not a cultural issue saying that, oh, all men, you know, they need to be talked to and this is, no, it shows that there are people in positions of power who will abuse that power. And they get away with it. They've gotten away with it for a long, long time. And I want to get your sense of what the future holds. Do you think that, you know, opening up the floodgates is really going to lead to change, or is this, you know, just the hot story for the moment and then people will lose interest?
I hope not. I hope that real change comes. And, you know, I want to make it as specific as we possibly can over what that change should look and could look like, because as great as it is to hear all these stories in the Me Too campaign, if everything stays the way it will, then you know nothing will change. I think at the very least, now that people, so many people have come forward, I think women will be much more, you know, they'll call it out right when it happens in real time, right when they see it. They're no longer going to have that terrified fear that either no one will believe them or they'll be, you know, shut up or smeared or anything like that. I think that that's made it more comfortable for women to come forward. The other thing I think is this idea that the rich and the powerful can pay their way out of trouble. Mm-hmm. That needs to end. You know, the non-disclosure agreements is something that I think needs to end when it comes to sexual harassment. To pay off a victim because of your egregious behavior, and then to continue that behavior because she can no longer speak about it.
Right.
That has to end. Because absolutely, in many of these cases, as you brought up, we're not just talking about an off-color comment. Mm-hmm. We're talking about assault. We're talking about rape. Those are felonies. Those are crimes. They should not be covered up.
Yeah, yes, that's a great point. I totally agree with you. Lauren will be joining us for the remainder of the show. So stick around, because after the break, we will cover more news. And Mark Thompson will also join us. So we'll be right back.
Great.
Hey guys, welcome back to TYT. Anna Kasparian, Lauren Savon, and Mark Thompson came back.
Back. Lauren Savon, in addition to being a fan, I work with Lauren Savon. She's a colleague of mine from our days at Fox 11 in Los Angeles.
So. That's right.
That's where I've seen you, actually. Like, it's funny because you were talking about Fox, but it didn't like register. I've seen you on air.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Good old Fox 11.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? I mean, Lauren's a brilliant talent. You know, she's.
Wow.
It's really true. And I can say this because I'm a brilliant talent, so I can recognize other brilliant talent.
Takes one to know one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun to have you on the panel.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, Lauren, you're getting a lot of love on Twitter as well. Ruth Iverson tweeted in and said, I love TYT for getting Lauren on the show.
Oh,
so Ruth seemed to enjoy that interview. And I'm, again, really grateful that you opened up and talked about it with us as well.
Of course. Thank you for having me on.
All right. So let's get to some of the other news. And unfortunately, there are more sexual assault issues. And it has to do with Kevin Spacey. So let's get to it. London's Old Vic Theatre did an investigation into Kevin Spacey and whether or not individuals working at the theatre ever had any type of inappropriate contact with Spacey while he was working there. He used to be the former artistic director there. And through the investigation, they were able to find that there were as many as 20 people who testified that they were harassed or assaulted in some way. We don't know the details of what they went through, but we do know the number of people who said that they had uncomfortable situations with him. So in the report that was released today, Thursday, it said that it found allegations of a range of inappropriate behavior relating to Kevin Spacey during his tenure, with 20 personal testimonies being part of the probe. Also, its trustees apparently knew nothing about these allegations until this investigation was conducted, but none of the allegations were made by people who had been minors at the time. And that's a relevant component of it, because the first allegation that came out against Kevin Spacey was by someone who said he was a minor when Spacey tried to force himself on him. So it's, you know, again, the floodgates are open and more allegations are gonna come forward, not just about Spacey or the people that we've already heard about, but you know, there are gonna be new allegations about new people in various professions. And you know, don't be surprised, because I think this type of behavior doesn't discriminate against political ideology or any of that. So it's devastating to know how prevalent this is, but I think it's finally a time that we can focus on solutions and change.
It's devastating because so many of these men are heroes. Kevin Spacey is one of the most brilliant actors of his generation. So when you hear these stories, you don't want to believe them. You know, allegations today against Senator Al Franken. He's a beloved senator of Minnesota. But these are serious allegations against these men. And you're right, this is probably just a couple.
Yeah.
And this kind of points to sort of a systemic thing going on at the Old Vic. And the Old Vic was so, you know, the Spacey, and as Lauren says, this actor who was so respected, going to the Old Vic in London, it was going to put asses in the seats, frankly. You know, yeah. It was really going to reinvigorate the Old Vic or take it to another level. And then
it was too vigorating, though.
Apparently there was a lot of vigorating going on behind the scenes. And he, again, is a person of power who was abusing that power and his position. And by now it's clear, so many people have come forward, that you have to say that there is some veracity to all of this stuff. And the Old Vic I'm talking about, that board of directors who were on the record there, they took this thing that was going to be just all good, and now it's a hornet's nest, right? Yeah. They have to go back and do this investigation, yeah. And it turns out there are all these allegations. So it's a mess. But yes, it falls in the category of another powerful guy taking advantage of his position.
I'm so happy that they did the investigation, right? Because they realized, oh, wait, this guy was our artistic director for a while. And there could have been people who were victimized, you know, in our group. Like, we need to make sure that that didn't happen. And if that did happen, we need to do something internally to make the environment safer for, you know, the people who work with us. And so they are taking action. And they outline some of those actions in their report. They will appoint guardians from across the board and a wider organization to champion best practices and be a first point of contact for those who don't want to reach out through formal channels. So there's usually like an issue with, oh, just go to HR and report it to HR. And then oftentimes the HR department will go ahead and protect the perpetrator.
Sure.
And so they're trying to find a way around that. They also want to spend time with those who work here to create an okay, not okay set of cultural expectations for all to understand and own. So having a dialogue about it and making sure that people are abundantly clear about what is and is not okay.
You know, this isn't a right or left issue, but it's also not just an American issue. I mean, Great Britain is also struggling with accusations against sexual misconduct in Parliament.
Yeah.
They had a member of the Welsh Parliament who had accusations against him, but they were never made public, not only to the public, but to him as well. And he suffered because of that and ended up killing himself. So these are really serious times we're in, and I, you know, as a journalist, it's hard for me to say, oh, these, you know, go with an allegation before we have any evidence or before anyone's been proven guilty. But in these cases, because there was no one to report it to, because there was nowhere to go, unfortunately, that's all we have are allegations. And when you have in mass 80 women coming forward, I mean, you use your deductive reasoning, it's probably true.
Right, and by the way, 80 women who have nothing to gain, think that there's like an agenda and they're looking to like
get a payday.
Yeah, but no, they have nothing to gain, honestly, other than, you know, hopefully sparking some real change in society.
That used to be the default position, right? She's doing it for the money, they're doing it for the money. You heard Lauren's case, there's no money in it. This horrible thing happened and she finally spoke up and was able to be part of the tide that carried away Weinstein. But there's another thing going on here, and you touched on it, Anna, and that is that the institution, the tendency is for them to protect themselves, right? So they say, we'll do an internal investigation. You saw it in the case of the Catholic Church with everything going on there. We're going to handle it internally. And then ended up that things weren't so well handled internally. You saw it with Penn State, with Jerry Sandusky. The university protected it itself. And so these institutions, they want to protect the institution first, and sometimes that can get in the way of an actual investigation. We've seen it with the U.S. military, and it can go on and on and on.
Yes, O'Reilly, who was the golden goose over at Fox News Channel, they protected him instead of the people that came forward.
Yeah,
because they want to protect that Fox News Channel brand first.
Yeah, and look, we're seeing it politically, right? And we're seeing it with state lawmakers, I want to be specific, state lawmakers in Alabama who would rather protect Roy Moore to protect their party than actually speak out against him and do the right thing.
And on a national level, we're seeing it with the president of the United States, 17-ish allegations of him inappropriately sexually involving himself with women, grabbing, kissing, all the rest, and him talking about it on tape. And yet, as you say, but they had their eye on the prize. The party had their eye on the prize, and they all fell in line. They said nothing, or they...
And they allowed him to call the women liars. And that's how it's been left.
Yeah. And also degrade them by, like, saying disparaging things about their looks, like, after all that went down. It's just, it's depressing.
But in this case, the old Vic, it does seem as though it's on the right track.
Right, and I commend them for that. All right, well, if you're feeling depressed over the news, you should worry, because the next story is also very depressing. But you should know about it, because we need to fight. And I think we can fight to defeat the efforts that the FCC has in dismantling net neutrality. A new report indicates that the FCC plans on voting to dismantle net neutrality very soon. And even though there's a lot going on in the news right now, it's incredibly important for everyone to pay close attention to this and to fight to prevent this from happening. We need to preserve net neutrality. Now, the head of the Federal Communications Commission, Ajit Pai, is set to unveil plans next week for a final vote to reverse a landmark 2015 net neutrality order, which barred the blocking or slowing of web content. Now, for those of you who are unaware of what net neutrality is, maybe you haven't been following along with the story, just a quick summary. Net neutrality is essentially regulation that ensures that internet service providers cannot slow down the speeds of certain websites. Now, when you consider the fact that some of these major internet service providers have merged with a bunch of other companies and they own media companies, well, it becomes problematic because they are allowed to slow down the websites of their competitors if we dismantle net neutrality. So a free and open internet will no longer exist, and we need to fight to preserve what we currently have. In May, the FCC voted 2-1 to advance Republican FCC Chairman Ajit Pai's plan to withdraw the former Obama administration's order reclassifying internet service providers as if they were utilities. Pai now plans to hold a final vote on the proposal at the FCC's December 14th meeting. So less than a month from now, that guy will dismantle the regulations that allow for a free and open internet.
Now, he looks like a good guy in that picture, but that's a very bad man.
I specifically show everyone that picture because he's a gigantic douchebag. And like, that is the mug that he uses to try to make himself seem like a fun loving. No, you're a dick, okay? And what he's trying to do right now, by the way, Verizon, which is one of these major internet service providers, is the company that he used to work at as a lawyer, right? So we talk about the revolving door of politics. This is kind of an example of that.
Yeah.
You know, this is a perfect example of that. He's trying to help out his buddies at his former job, and who knows what other, perks he's going to get from a company like Verizon or another internet service provider when he's no longer the FCC chairman.
I mean, when you look at it, it's just a matter of making more money, right? Because they can charge more for these faster internet speeds.
Yes.
So people who can't pay more get the slow.
Yeah, so nonprofits or small ma-and-pa type. I mean, we say, well, how many ma-and-pa places are there? Well, there are lots.
Yes.
I mean, the net is filled with them. And the net neutrality, which is just that, a neutral net. Everything, there's nobody's biased in anybody's favor or against anyone. So everything comes in at the same speed. That neutral net is going to go away. And Anna's right to point to the associations of Ajit Pai, but the last guy also had associations. Wheeler was also mobbed up with Comcast. So these guys, the fact that they're mobbed up, oftentimes that's just what we end up with. We end up with Goldman Sachs guys running Treasury and all of that sort of thing. But in this case, Ajit Pai was, from the outset, he stated, we're going to change this. Net neutrality is going away. That was one of the cornerstones of his new commission. And I think he's really going to follow through on it. I mean, this is going to be revolutionary. And it will, and as Lauren says, if you can't pay, you ain't getting in. People won't be able to download you as quickly as they will those sites that can pay.
And let me guess, their argument is capitalism.
Exactly, free market.
But it's the exact, this is crony capitalism, right? I mean, capitalism is supposed to support competition. And in this case, doing away with the one regulation that preserves competition. So independent media, gone. Unless you're gonna, partner up with a major company that can pay the price for faster internet speeds, gone. right? And that is a very scary society to live in. And just to give you even further context, it's very clear what their intentions are. Because if you look at other cases that the FCC is voting on, they're totally fine with certain types of mergers, for instance, certain types of media acquisitions that would lead to more propaganda, in my opinion, less diversity of opinion in media. Let me give you an example. So on Thursday, the FCC, that's actually today. So today, the FCC will vote on Pai's proposal to eliminate the 42-year-old ban on cross-ownership of a newspaper and TV station in a major market. The proposal would make it easier for media companies to buy additional TV stations in the same market. Pai is also expected to call for an initial vote in December to rescind rules that say one company may not own stations serving more than 39% of US television households. And that's according to two people who have been briefed on this matter.
And that goes exactly to what you're talking about, Anna, which is a plurality of information. So by preventing a company from owning a television station and a newspaper, you're forcing, in a sense, different information to come out, right? Mm-hmm. So now I own the television station, but I don't own the newspaper. So the newspaper can say whatever they want. If I own both, then I'll make sure they say everything that I want on both those outlets. And that's what's happening in market after market. And so now, even the meager restrictions, and they're pretty lame restrictions to begin with, restricting ownership nationwide, they're going away. So you're going to end up with Sinclair Broadcasting and all of these different companies that have an agenda owning tremendous amounts of broadcast. And that's where so much information comes to so many voters. So think of it this way. Fox News Channel extends its reach because they're huge, generally right-leaning, some of them are extreme right in the case of Sinclair, companies that will now own all of these methods of disseminating information.
Right. And by the way, to be absolutely clear, if we're talking about liberals having the advantage,
I don't care.
I don't want people to be exposed to one side. Like, we're clear about what our perspective is on this show and on this network, but I don't want us to be your only source of information. I wouldn't want to dominate the market to the point where we have a monopoly, right? And so we're now unfortunately asleep at the wheel while this is going on, and we need to protect a free and open internet. All voices should be heard equally. I don't care if you're a conservative or a liberal. I don't care what your thoughts or feelings are. It's just important to be able to have a voice and not let major corporations decide whether or not that voice should be heard.
So what do? We like troll Pai, or
I think it is a call. Actually, I think it's a call Washington type situation.
Absolutely. And more importantly, look, this particular issue has received 22 million comments, right? Because issues like this are open for public comment, and an organization like the FCC is supposed to take those comments into consideration. But look, if you have to take to the streets do civil disobedience, whatever it is, however you feel like you need to mobilize people and make your voices heard, please do it, because this can't stand. December 14th is, again, less than a month from now.
Yeah.
And I'm worried that we're all going to be so, I don't want to say distracted, because there's a lot of important things going on right now. There's like a big news story every hour. But I'm worried that we're going to be preoccupied with all these other things, and then this is going to slip through the cracks.
Thank you, because I think that's the key point. There's so much stuff
that's
going on, and it's a smokescreen for this getting by. And it's just, this net neutrality is going
to
be with us.
Whenever they're trying to slip things in during the holidays, you usually want to pay extra careful attention.
Crazy.
Yeah. Right. By the way, just on the what should be done, there's a list of things that can be done. Go on the right now neutral net and see all the places you can really join the activism around this issue. It's big. Net neutrality could change the face of the internet forever in
Absolutely.
This country.
All right, so I'm going to move on to a little bit of fun, because there's a lot of like terrible stuff going on. But I came across something that was really amusing, and I wanted to share it with you guys. It's kind of like an old school type of story that we would do. So there's a lot of controversy surrounding an app that recently came out. It's known as the Make app, MAKEAPP. And the whole point of this is to see what individuals look like without makeup.
Oh.
Now, This is so funny. Okay, so the app also has filters that are like put makeup on the subject as well.
That's good.
But that part's not getting news because there have been a number of apps that do that. The part that is making news is the fact that it supposedly shows what women look like without makeup. So there have been a number of female writers who have expressed their feelings on it, and they're upset and outraged, and they think that it's sexist. And I more want to address them than the people that are trolling with these apps, because don't give them what they want. They want it so badly, right? And like I know it's really annoying to say don't feed the trolls. I get that sometimes too, and I'm just like, I'll feed them if I want. But like, think about what it says about a person who like gets excited by this. Like, let them get excited. Who cares, right? So
yeah. So I agree. Let's. We've gotten so filtered. I mean, you go on Instagram accounts, I don't even
recognize the people.
I don't even recognize myself. Like, I put so much filters on. I'm like, oh my God, is that me? Is that? And I have to say, like, guys, they do. They get angry. You know, they're like, wait, I don't have no idea what she looks like, because women put so much photoshopping into posting photos. So I get why they need this app or want it, right?
Right.
Women are saying it's sexist. How would we feel if, like, when we met a guy in person, he like took off his muscles and like hung him up in the closet? You know, I mean, there is some false advertising that women do online. So I can understand why guys are like, let's cut to the chase and see what she looks like, sans makeup.
So I agree with you in part, but there's one thing that I disagree with. Men don't wear makeup, that's true. Mm. But I remember when I was single and on Tinder, and I remember seeing pictures of dudes thinking like, yeah, I'll go out on a date with you. And then you meet up with them and you're like, oh, okay, so that wasn't you.
Yeah.
And that's a little misleading. So I get it, like, people are concerned about that. But there's also like the trolls who just wanna troll you. I let them troll you, like, who cares, right? Like, I just think giving them a full on article about how outraged you are is feeding into this nonsense. So,
and advertising the app.
So by the way, it was created by a guy named Ashot Gabelyanov. So he
I thought it was Asshat.
Ashot is actually an Armenian name.
A-S-H-O-T.
Yeah, so I think he's Armenian, but living in Russia, I don't know. And then he was labeled as a Russian propagandist. I don't know anything about him, so I'm not going to get into that. But I just thought it was really funny. And so I didn't know about this app until yesterday during the show, because I started getting screenshots. Like, people were sending me screenshots of how they use me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was laughing about it because I thought it was funny. So I'm going to skip ahead to graphic 45. Okay. So this is what they sent me. And
God, Anna.
Oh, that's not real.
So, okay, so whatever. I thought it was really funny. And okay, so here's the thing that I love about it the most. I didn't respond or react to it because, as you can tell, I don't care. And then,
so that's not you underneath.
So since there wasn't a reaction from me, which again, to my point, they so desperately want, they photoshopped a reaction. They just made up a reaction. I never tweeted about it. I don't care to tweet
about
it.
Who's the liars now?
I know, it's so funny. So
by the way, that it doesn't just take makeup off, it like adds 30 years to you.
It does.
They really photoshopped all over that. So they made Anna look
like she's dying.
But the thing is, like, I don't care, right? Like, my looks or what people think about my looks, I care about what my husband thinks. I care about what I think. That's all that matters. But I was like, okay, well, people think that I tweeted that, so I had to like make it clear that it was a fake tweet. And I did so on Instagram, and I included a picture of myself without makeup. So,
there you go.
Oh, shocker.
Look how adorable she is without makeup.
But I just love
it. I read this, you know, like, I follow Anna on Instagram, of course. And I saw that this morning, and I thought, well, why? I don't really quite understand this. It was something about makeup, and I don't know. I thought it was a cute picture, so I liked it, you know.
Yeah.
And then I learned that this is all relative to these people who had kind of concocted a way of trolling you.
By
pretending that you'd reacted to this app.
Yeah, but again, like, them making a fake tweet, just again, the only reason why I bring that up is because, ladies, they want you to react. Like, that's what, think about how sad that is. I mean, that's so sad. Like, and by the way, obviously this app makes some guys feel better about themselves, right? Like, oh, this woman won't date me, won't call me, whatever. I bet she's actually eyeliner. Really ugly without makeup. And if it makes them feel good about themselves, awesome. Awesome. Like, who cares? But don't react to them. It's just ridiculous. Anyway, it just also reminded me of the red woman from Game of Thrones, where she looks like that,
yeah.
But then she takes her makeup off and she looks like this.
So yeah,
it's just
true.
Hilarious. Mm. I don't know.
Good lesson learned.
And just yesterday, we did a story about what's his name, Gene Simmons, and how he said women need to wear makeup and lift and separate their breasts, and men will do anything for them.
I hate when guys like Gene Simmons or whomever make these two, like, women need to do this, women need to do that. Shut the F up, buddy.
Well, all women obviously want to please Gene Simmons. Yeah, right. I mean, I'm speaking from majority of women, and we want to know, Gene, what should we do to curry favor and get your attention?
Yeah, if you could have like a daily, maybe, you know, upload as to your thoughts to on what we should
guidelines.
Do as women.
You can't win. Like, you wear the makeup and you get criticized. You don't wear the makeup, you get criticized. So just leave people alone. Let's focus on other things.
That's
how about that? All
right,
we got to take one more break. Let's do that. I will read your TYT lives, and then one final story for you guys. It's actually really good news, so you don't want to miss it. Come right back. Welcome back to TYT. Lauren Savon, Mark Thompson, and Anna Kasparian with you. A few TYT lives before we get to our last story. Jeremy Varner says, ironically, as you talk of net neutrality, my internet briefly crapped out.
Oh.
Yes.
See? That's why it's more important than ever.
Yes. I mean, they're already doing it. No, they're not. But it'll be a lot worse, I'm guessing, if we dismantle net neutrality. Also, George T says, or Mark T Live, I apologize, says, I want that hat. Just kidding. Fine headwear. I'll have to buy one.
Oh, yeah. I'm Mark. He says, Mark T Live, you want that hat. This hat comes from the members shop. So if you're a member, you'll get this hat. This is a special hat.
Yes.
Wow. Looks sort of like the regular TYT hat. But on the back of this hat, it says member.
Okay.
Oh, I thought Anna had it too.
No, you just reminded me of something I'm supposed to read, so I'm going to go ahead and read it now. Thursday, November 16th, is day two. Shop TYT's 10 days of Black Friday sale.
Oh.
It's here.
Already?
Yes, which is crazy, right?
Yeah.
If you're interested in learning more about this sale and you want to know what the discounts are, you just text DEAL to 228466. Again, that's 228466. And you will stay up to date on the daily promotions, like today's limited edition, probably backpack, or is it patch pack? Oh, it's patch pack. Okay. I don't know what that is, but it sounds fun.
It's a pack of patches.
Oh,
that's exactly what it is.
Cool. Yeah. So check it out. Again, the number is 228466. Type deal to that number and you'll get some promo codes and things like that. All right, you guys ready?
I have to say one last thing, because in the break, something very cute, I thought, funny. We're talking about that app that like makes you look better. And then I was saying, you know, you can, there are all these different apps that you can make you look better. Yeah. So sometimes, because sometimes you're in a picture and you go, hey, you know, I'm the only one who doesn't look good, but the other three people look good. And then Lauren mentioned that she'd actually seen a picture that where it had been corrected for somebody else.
Yeah, all the people using Facetune apps that you can make yourself thinner.
Uh-huh.
So if you're in a group of four people and someone made themselves thinner next to me, but they made me wider because they're manipulating the image.
Yeah, because it squeezes. So when you squeeze yourself thinner, you're squeezing the other person fatter.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's so awkward.
So it's the law of unintended consequences.
That's right. We're not friends anymore.
So I've used filters, obviously. Like, who hasn't? But I'm too afraid to use those other apps that can, like, manipulate bodies because I feel like I'm going to be like a clown and do something so obvious and I'm gonna embarrass myself. So I'm just like, if I don't like the way the picture looks, I'm just not gonna post it. You
but
know?
Remember
like,
Beyonce?
Uh-huh.
She, you know, was messing around with a bunch of her images from the Super Bowl. Like, they made her look thinner and tighter and people called her out on it because it was like such a crappy job that they did. You can see the background moving and everyone's like, Beyonce. Like, if she's not comfortable with herself at this point, I mean, but there's no hope for the rest of us.
I know. I'm not a skillful person, so I could totally see the same thing happening. All right, so one story, and it's a good hopeful story, so let's get to it. Currently, researchers are trying to figure out a way to diagnose individuals with CTE while they are still alive. Now, CTE is a chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is the condition that a lot of NFL players have been diagnosed with after they died. And in a lot of cases, they committed suicide or became increasingly violent prior to passing. And so through autopsies, it was discovered that these individuals had the condition, but there was never a way to diagnose them while they were still alive. Well, researchers have had a breakthrough, and more research needs to be done. But this new study indicates that researchers may be one step closer to being able to diagnose the disease while a patient is still alive by detecting deposits of a certain type of protein, tau protein. Now, scans performed on 14 retired NFL players while they were still alive indicated the presence of this protein. It's a type that clumps up over neural cells that have been damaged. The protein slowly spreads throughout the brain, killing brain cells, according to the Concussion Legacy Foundation. So when one of these former players died, doctors were able to determine whether the distinctive CTE pattern that resulted in his scan actually indicated the presence of the disease. So clearly more research needs to be done to kind of corroborate these findings, but it's so important to diagnose people or find a way to diagnose people while they're alive so you can then move on to solutions, treatments, or a possible cure.
Right, because up until now it was only after post-mortem exam that could confirm whether they had it. But when you listen to some of the symptoms that these men are suffering from at a relatively young age, you know, in their 50s, you think, my God, there has to be something that we can do to prevent this type of
It's horrible. And,
you
know,
wasting,
to tell you a little more about the NFL player who was the, you know, the subject of this finding, he was very young. He was in his 60s when he died. But he played football for 22 years between the ages of 11 and 33. At that point, he stopped playing football. He retired. But the condition didn't really start to affect him until later in life. So the man was 59, I apologize, 59 when his brain was scanned, according to the study. 2 years later, at the age of 61, the man's wife noticed that he had been experiencing progressive motor deficits, such as the inability to button his shirts, zip his pants, or tie his shoes.
Yeah.
It's just such a devastating.
It's horribly debilitating.
Yeah.
It, you know, these NFL players now are aware of it, and it's a real, it's an awful choice they have to make, right? Because they know that they say that that there's a little trauma on every play. Even you know, it's not just those horrible collisions. So this is just in relation to the NFL because. As Anna says, it happens a lot of NFL players. Apparently, there's more and more research that soccer players also show signs of it. I guess that's because of the headbutting and the use of the head in the sport. But in any case, they're faced with the question, here's a sport I love. Here's a sport that I excel at. Here's this thing that I love doing and I excel at it. And I'm going to make all this money doing it. It could enable an entire life for myself and my family. and yet it may rob me of you know, of half of my life, or the last 30 years of my life, or even more.
Yeah. A lot of parents now question whether or not to let their children play, because you know, professional football players usually start at very young ages, and some parents are saying, absolutely not, I'm not going to let my kids play football to try and spare them from these types of brain injuries, because we don't know enough.
And I think what's important is that the information is now out there. Because remember, when this story broke, the NFL was trying to withhold the data, withhold the information. And then people aren't able to make an informed decision. And so making an informed decision is the first part of this. And I really do believe the second part is, you know, coming up with a proper way of diagnosing people and treatment and a cure. But this is good news. It's hopeful. Hopefully they can corroborate it and we will see some progress. Thank you to Lauren Savon.
Thanks for having me.
And Mark Thompson for joining me. Mark will stay behind for the post game, so check us out on there. For everyone else, have a good night. Bye-bye.